Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz Today.
Welcome back, everybody, to Tony Katz Today. Tony is out today, but I am filling in for him. I'm Kira Davis. You can follow me on Twitter at Real Kira Davis. That's K-I-R-A. And you can also sign up for my podcast, subscribe to my podcast. Just listen to yourself with Kira Davis. It's a critical thinking podcast where I take hot topics, hot button ideas, and I discuss the talking points on those ideas, and I draw them all the way out to their logical conclusion. Because I think a lot of times, even most people, when they actually dig into the things they're not saying what they think they are. We've been talking about the state of the Republican Party, what's going on with Trump. I ended the last hour with Ronna McDaniel. I want to continue this discussion. Because, I've got to thank Jeff for that great phone call in the first hour. And I'm not just saying that because he said so many nice things about me, although that helps. It does help a lot. Maybe I'm biased, but I tend to favor people who compliment me. But I loved what he asked, because I think this is something we all need to keep in mind. It doesn't matter what side of the political fence you're on. What's the plan here? What's the plan for the future? What are we doing? What plans do we have as a movement, or if you're a party person, as a party, for correcting the path of this country? Because right now everything's utter chaos. So I said a big move for the Republicans was to get Ronna McDaniel out of that top position at the RNC. And while her goal is fundraising and voter turnout, there's also a big messaging aspect to that. But to me, the Ronna McDaniel story, fiasco, if you will, is indicative of a larger issue. Is that we have two, and I'm speaking as a Republican now, I'm speaking as a conservative now. We have two tiers in this party. And I think Democrats feel the same way, right? There's the Beltway folks, which we might call them the elitists or the establishment. And then we have the regular people, the voters. We're experiencing very different things. And the vote to NBC, now she's hired. This is the next logical step. This is what you do in the Beltway. Your whole job is to, when you finish with politics, you get hired out of think tank or you get hired in media. That's the goal. Listen to what Ronna McDaniel had to say on Meet the Press. I'm going to read to you what she had to say, but then I want to play a clip of Chuck Todd responding. She was on Meet the Press. It's her sort of inaugural appearance as now an official member of NBC. And Kristen Welker, who's clearly not a fan of Republicans or Ronna McDaniel, asks her a question about January 6th. And she says, you know, why didn't you speak up more about January 6th? She says, you're a failed chair. That's what somebody in the RNC has said about you. You're a failed chair. Did you deserve to stay in that position with that track record? And then she goes on to say, well, yeah, sure. I'll push back on that very hard. The fact is that under my time as chair, we've had more women in Congress than ever in the history of our party. And she goes on to tout minority engagement offices that she has opened, as if any of that has really made a difference. The only minority engagement we're seeing increase is because of Donald Trump. It's as crazy as it sounds. But here's Ronna taking credit for that. And then she goes on to say this, because Kristen Welker asked her about January 6th, and look, why didn't you do more? She says, I want to be very clear. This is Ronna McDaniel speaking. The violence that happened on January 6th is unacceptable. It doesn't represent our country. It certainly doesn't represent my party. We should not be attacking the Capitol. We should not be having violence. I said it that day. I put a statement out that day that it's not acceptable. If you attacked our Capitol and you have been, then you've been convicted, then that should stay. So I'm going to read another segment, but I want to comment on this first. This is an example of failed leadership, because this is who she always was. What an opportunity for Ronna McDaniel to now, she's now a part of the apparatus. She's now a part of the mainstream apparatus to get up there and to talk about the egregious prosecutions of people like Siaka Massacoy, who's a personal friend of mine, works for the Babylon Bee, has acted in some Daily Wire projects, was just in the Capitol for a second. He happened to be there that day. Left when he was asked to leave and even held the door. There's video of him holding the door open for Capitol Police to assist them to get into the Capitol and telling them, you know, here's where you should go. Siaka is now being charged and he's facing up to 6.5 years in prison. And this man and his wife just had a baby like 3 days ago. What an opportunity for her to stand up for people like that. There might have been a couple of troublemakers in the mix there that maybe have some legitimate charges. From what I've seen, most of these charges are, I keep using the word egregious, but I can't think of a better word. They really are. They're political in nature. What an opportunity for her to stand up for people and to say she could have even split the difference. Hey, I think anybody who went there with bad intentions, that's obviously a bad thing. I don't support that, but I also don't support the political prosecution of people who are just there to have their voices heard. And what we're seeing is dangerous for our country. That's not the messaging she gave when she had the opportunity. She had the opportunity to make waves. She had the opportunity to rock the boat. And it doesn't even affect now her job at the RNC. And she still flaked. It's because she doesn't believe it. She's not an ideologue. And we do need ideologues in the party. Because guess what? Progressive leftists are ideologues. Progressivism first, above everything, above religion, above family, above sexuality, above party. Ideology is everything. And we need to at least match that energy. But you have people like Ronna McDaniel just flaking on opportunities to stand up for justice and also parroting the media narrative on this. I don't accept the violence. The only person killed on that day was a young woman killed by Capitol Police officers. Not the opposite, but the whole media narrative has been that we were just seconds away from America becoming an authoritarian, you know, dictatorship. She has the opportunity to correct the record and stand up for people who are being falsely accused, and she flaked on purpose. So Kristen Welgen pushes back. And she says, well, why didn't you say this when you were the head of the RNC? Why didn't you stand up and say it then? And Ronna says, well, this is very telling. She says, well, when you're the RNC chair, you kind of take one for the whole team, right? Now I get to be a little bit more of myself, right? This is what I believe. I don't think violence should be in our political discourse. Really, Ronna? What a great opportunity for you to sit there and talk about the violence being perpetrated against American citizens right now, every day, by non-citizens, by people who are let or who are allowed to stream over our border, unaccosted by the Biden administration. What about Black Lives Matter and Antifa activists burning down churches, synagogues, defiling national monuments, for crying out loud? The Biden administration had to put security around the Capitol building during the State of the Union speech, not because of, quote, Capitol rioters, not because of J6 sympathizers, but because of their own protest class, because of Antifa, because of pro-Hamas protesters. They had to do that for their own safety against their own side. Why wouldn't Ronna mention that? What an opportunity for her to mention that. See what I mean? She was never good on messaging because she didn't believe it. She's not on the side of justice. She's not on the side of the American people. She's on the side of Ronna McDaniel. Jennifer Van Laar has been on this show a few times. Her reporting at Red State broke all of the incredible spending at the RNC that Ronna did, spending on cosmetic surgeries for herself, which are very obvious in her NBC clips. She's had a lot of work done. And while it's not my place to judge whatever work a woman has done to her face, I do judge you if you're spending this kind of money while you're supposed to be the face, pun intended, of the party that's supposed to wrestle back the American economy for Americans. But she never, the reason why it feels like the RNC isn't out there doing the work on behalf of Republican and conservative voters across the country is because they're not. Because when Ronna McDaniel finally has the chance to speak out loud and speak, quote, freely, what does she say? Oh, I didn't get to be myself. Myself is actually liberal. No wonder things have been failing over there. So I have no idea what kind of a leader Lara Trump is going to be. I have no idea. But anything's going to be better than Ronna McDaniel at this point. Sometimes a change is as good as a rest. So Kristen says, when you're the RNC, Ronna goes on to say, I don't think violence should be in our political discourse, Republican or Democrat. I disagree with that. I agree with him on a whole host of other things, him being Trump. Let's close the border. Let's make sure we have good incomes for people. Let's make sure we do a lot of great things. But on that point, I don't think we should be freeing people who violently attacked the Capitol police officers and attacked the Capitol. What a fail. What a failure. Thank God we didn't elect her uncle, even though it meant we had another 4 years of Obama. And thank God we got rid of her. Now we're seeing her true colors. So when you're asking the question, what's the plan for America? What's the plan for our future? How do we wrestle things back? Just know the people who have been in charge of that plan actually have never had your best interest in mind. They think you're stupid. And they think that most of life happens inside the confines of the Beltway. And that's the infection we're dealing with in national politics. And that was one of the things that Trump was trying to do, which I wish he would have done faster. And I hope he does next time if he gets a chance, decentralize the central government. Start moving some of these offices out of DC. We've got to get these people back on our level. I'm going to play Chuck Todd's response when we come back. I'm Keira Davis filling in for Tony Katz, and you're listening to Tony Katz Today. Welcome back to Tony Katz Today. I'm Keira Davis filling in for Tony Katz. We're talking about Ronna McDaniel, rotten leadership, and why things seem like they suck so bad. It's a failure in leadership, weak leadership. Ronna had the opportunity to stand up for principles and stand up for a new direction for America by accepting the job on NBC, and she blew it. She showed us who she really was the whole time. So I think our judgments of her have been fair. Well, Chuck Todd and a lot of people at NBC are not happy with the Ronna McDaniel hire. Even though she's milquetoast, centrist, pretty much leaning to the left, it's still not good enough because nothing is good enough for the left. They have been very successful in completely demonizing views that don't toe a progressive line. So here's Chuck Todd actually tearing down his own employer on national television on one of the most influential political shows in America. Talking about Ronna McDaniel, I think it's an astounding statement that he's made. So let's play that clip.
I think our bosses owe you an apology for putting you in this situation because I don't know what to believe. She is now a paid contributor by NBC News. So I have no idea whether any answer she gave to you was because she didn't want to mess up her contract. Mm. She wants us to believe that she was speaking for the RNC when the RNC was paying for it. So she has credibility issues that she still has to deal with.
Yeah.
Is she speaking for herself or is she speaking on behalf of who's paying her? Once at the RNC, she did say that, hey, I'm speaking for the party. I get that. That's part of the job. So what about here? I will say this. I think your interview did a good job of exposing, I think, many of the contradictions. And look, there's a reason why there's a lot of journalists at NBC News uncomfortable with this because many of our professional dealings with the RNC over the last 6 years have been met with gaslighting, have been met with character assassination. So it is, that's where you begin here. And so when NBC made the decision to give her NBC News' credibility, you got to ask yourself, what does she bring NBC News? And when we make deals like this, and I've been at this company a long time, you're doing it for access to audience. Sometimes it's access to an individual, and we can have a journalistic ethics debate about that, and I'm willing to have that debate. And if you told me we were hiring her as a technical advisor to the Republican convention. I think that would be certainly defensible. If you told me we're talking to her, but let's see how she does in some interviews and maybe vet her with actual journalists inside the network, see if it's a two-way, what she can bring the network. So I do think, unfortunately, this interview is always going to be looked through the prism of who is she speaking for, right? I think you did everything you could do. You got put into an impossible situation booking this interview, and then all of a sudden the rugs pull out from under you. You find out she's being paid to show up. That's unfortunate for this program, but I am glad you did the best that you could, and that's why the three of us are on here to try to bolster that editorial independence.
Why?
Well, he's talking to Kristen Welkin there, who had the Rana interview. Everything Chuck said was completely hypocritical. He was being a total hypocrite. If Ronna McDaniel was anybody else, I would say that's very unfair. How many people on your network are there because they're getting paid to say a certain thing? Chuck, y'all are getting paid to say certain things. If Joy Reid on MSNBC tomorrow says, you know what, I'm not talking about race anymore. It's just divisive. I feel like I'm just a tap dancer here, and I want to talk about other things. Does she still have a job? No. Joy Reid offers nothing but the race discussion. That's all she offers. She's getting paid for that discussion. You all are getting, Chuck, the day you come out and say, you know what, maybe we do need to rethink gender transition for children, or maybe we need to rethink parental rights in public school districts. What happens to you? You're getting paid to hold a certain line, to toe a certain line. What a hypocritical thing to say. That being said, Rana's getting everything she deserved. Of course she deserves that question. It's a good question to ask. I just wish they would ask it about themselves too, and about their own side. Yeah, is she saying what she's saying because she's getting paid to say it? Because it's different than what she was saying when she was the head of that organization. And she did have the opportunity to clarify, I believe these things because I'm a Republican and because these are where my principles. She talked nothing about principles, nothing about what she believes, what is valuable for the American consumer, the American family, the American taxpayer. She has the opportunity on that network as someone who's not only hired, but now she's doing this controversial interview, which is certainly pulling a lot more eyes in than normally Meet the Press would have. She's got this extraordinary opportunity to message justice, to message American values, to message the Republican Party platform. She apparently claims she still wants Republicans to win. And what did she do? She got all mealy-mouthed and milquetoast, and because she doesn't care. She's completely above everything that happens to us. If your taxes go up, we're going to talk later on the show about what's going on here in California with insurance, but that's going on everywhere because of the rise in crime. This is an opportunity for her to address what real Americans are feeling at the most basic levels. If she is really serious about Republicans winning, then she would use this opportunity, but she's not. These are people who are only self-interested. Most politicians are only self-interested, by the way. And I think the idea of finding this ideal principled man or woman who's going to come in and just stand up for the American people, that's a rare reality. Most politicians are self-interested. And I think the best you and I can do as voters is choose the person whose self-interests best line up with our own. And when I see people leading the Republican Party, or I'll say this as a Black voter, because most of us vote Democrat, not me, but most of us, even the Democrat Party, I want to see people who have the same self-interest as me. Are lower taxes in your benefit? It's lower crime in your benefit? Is a secure border in your benefit? And if they've got something to gain from those things, even if that something is just my votes, then yeah, I think that's acceptable. I think that's an acceptable valuation for elections. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're talking Israel. AOC's got some comments on that. We'll talk about what's going on with the UN when it comes to Israel. I'm Kira Davis, filling in for Tony Katz. You're listening to Tony Katz Today. Welcome back, everybody, to Tony Katz Today. I am your guest host, filling in for Tony. I'm Kira, that's K-I-R. You can buy my book on Amazon or a faithful text called Drawing Lines, Why Conservatives Must Be of Ideas. It's my first book, and it is all about how everyone needs to get in this game. And everybody needs to pick a spot, and everybody needs to pick a battle, and you need to get moving. There's no more bystander right now. I know a lot of you want to be bystanders. You hoping you elect these leaders and they do the job you elect them to do. But it's been a mistake to take our hands off the wheel. And so now we've made a lot of work for ourselves. So that means you're going to have to get in the game wherever you are. And I'm not just saying that. I'm not just throwing these ideas out there and like, go find something to do and do it. No, I give you actual practical suggestions for what you can do right where you are. It doesn't have to be running for office. It doesn't have to be, you know, going to protests. There are little things you can do. So I break down each sort of major, what I feel is a major cultural issue in America right now. And then I tell you what you can do. I break down the transgender issue. I break down education. I break down women's issues. I break down Black Lives Matter. How do we get into this race discussion without becoming crazy about it? There's all sorts of things you can do. A great example is Haya Raychek from the Libs of TikTok woman, and she's on the board, the library, her local library advisory board. Did you know that's a position that you can apply for? Some municipalities, it's just an appointed position, and others, it's an elected position. But you get to adjudicate all the books that come through your public and school libraries. That's a big deal. And you know who always runs for these positions? I found this out recently because something came across my Twitter feed, X, I guess we're calling it, my X feed. It was just a progressive account that I follow, and they were posting about this library race in Minneapolis, and it was for the library board. I just clicked on it. It was just a little nothing story. I had like 2 likes on it, but I just clicked on it because I'm like, oh, what are the people who are running for the library board like? And they were just one was an avowed socialist, like a proud avowed, I'm a socialist, I'm a Marxist, I'm proud of it. But they were both far left progressives. And then I looked at who else was on the board, and it was all far left progressives. I never would have known that if I clicked on that story, a little story about the Minneapolis library board and who was running for it. I think it was Minneapolis. Could have been something in that area. But it's just little things like that you can do. Get in these positions. I know a lot of you are listening from the Midwest. You're in Indiana. You're listening out of WIBC. In Indianapolis, I'm in California. And I know a lot of y'all complain about us coming your way, right? Because we're fleeing California in droves. And the one thing I hear all the time from people is, huh, if your people are coming this way, tell them not to vote for the stupid things they voted for to ruin California. No, I'm not going to tell anybody that, because you know why? You can't tell people how to vote. People are going to vote how they want to vote. You can't tell people how to vote. And you can't stop them from moving to your neighborhood. What you can do is fill the positions that they're going to take when they get there. That's what I suggest you start doing. Instead of just complaining about us coming to you, and we are, sorry, I would stop it if I could, but I can't. Instead of just complaining about something you have no control over, start controlling the mechanisms of government that these people come to take over. Because this is the conference call culture. That's what I call them. They love meetings. They love government. They don't want to send you an email. They want to sit in a 3-hour meeting. These are the people who are running government. It's conference call culture. So you need the people, you need to make sure that the people who love meetings aren't in government. That means you're going to have to get there. So you're going to, and you'll have to run for a big office, school board, or a municipal office. You can do what Haya is doing. You know, find a smaller position, or go into your school libraries and check out the books there. See what's there. There's so many things you can do. That's what my book is about. It's also a precursor to my second book, which will be out next year, which is all about how I went from being a liberal default Democrat as a Black voter, you know, just kind of raised with that, how I went from a liberal default Democrat to a hard right conservative. Guess what some people would call a right wing nut job. All right. Well, let's move on to Israel. That is always going on. And we're seeing the Democrat strategy for 2024 shape up because they've really got nothing to run on, right? They've ruined everything and it's very obvious. So they've got a couple of things that they're going to hammer home: the Trump prosecution, abortion, and Israel. They've perplexingly taken the side of Hamas in all of this. So Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has found herself, a new catchphrase: forced famine. And now she's out there talking to anyone who will listen about how Israel is forcing famine on Gaza because they're not letting food and aid get through. And this is, although Democrats won't say this officially, this is the position of the Democrat Party. We've actually seen Kamala Harris out there saying something similar, that Israel is blocking aid. I want to play this clip from this couple minutes from AOC on Jake Tapper. And then I want to talk about what's going on with the messaging coming from the Democrats on Israel. Let's go ahead and play this clip, AOC on Jake Tapper.
So I asked Israeli officials about your speech, and they say, we are allowing hundreds of aid trucks into Gaza every single day. They're trying to increase those numbers. They have to inspect the cargo to make sure no weapons are getting in, weapons that would be used by Hamas against the people of Israel. They also, Israeli officials also argue, this war could end tomorrow if Hamas freed the hostages and laid down the arms. Do you disagree?
I do disagree, because when we are talking about famine, the actions of Hamas should not be tied to whether a three-year-old can eat. The actions of Hamas do not justify forcing thousands, hundreds of thousands of people to eat grass as their bodies consume themselves. We and the Israeli government has a right to go after Hamas. But we are talking about a population of millions of innocent Palestinians. We are talking about collective punishment, which is injustifiable. And the excuses that the Israeli government is giving about what they are and are not allowing simply do not square with what the UK government is stating, with what international aid organizations are stating, and even what our own State Department officials are stating, which is that they are not allowing aid to go through. When they're talking about inspections, we're talking about US aid, the United States aid. And so I think that if we are to operate as allies, then we must operate in good faith to uphold the principles of democracy, which includes respect for human rights, and also proving the value of our democracy, which is that we are different than authoritarian, and we are different from other types of regimes with no regard for innocent people.
So do I even have enough time to talk about how much was wrong with that statement? Now, it's AOC. She's wrong about almost everything. So that's not a surprise, but it is representative of the thinking that's going on the Democrat side. Later on, I'll play a clip from Kamala talking about maps. But she talks about how, you know, there's nothing that can justify letting a three-year-old starve. That there's no, that the actions of Hamas do not justify letting a three-year-old starve. Isn't it interesting that she's connecting letting that three-year-old starve to Israel, not to Hamas? Why wouldn't she just say out loud, yes, I think Hamas should end their war against Israel. Yes, I think Hamas should release the hostages. And then if there's still no food getting through, if Israel's going to honor that, if Israel says, hey, all we want is these hostages back and this ends, well, let's see if that's the no brainer to me, right? Even if you want to take Hamas's side, even if you want to take the side of so-called Palestinians, seems like a no brainer to me to say, okay, call Israel's bluff. Okay. Hamas, she has not mentioned the hostages at all. not to say what they're going through, what acts against them are justified, what's justifiable about their families suffering through this. She has had no regard for that. This is all framed as a problem with Israel and, perplexingly, America. This is not our battle, but Israel is an ally. Hamas can feed those three-year-olds, by the way. Now, she's disputing that. She's saying, no, it's not true. The aid is not getting, the aid is getting through. It always has gotten through. There's no shortage of money floating around these poverty-stricken areas across the globe. We don't have time to do an episode, but you could do a whole week of Tony Katz Today shows on the state of the African continent and how much money they get from this government alone every year. Where does it go? That was the whole thing with Trump and the Puerto Rico governor. Nobody bothered to really talk to people on the ground in Puerto Rico. But people just made it sound, oh, Trump's a racist. He's talking about this Puerto Rican government. She's complaining she doesn't have enough supplies for hurricane relief. She did. And she did. It was all sitting there in a warehouse. Why? She was holding it hostage. Because she didn't care. Again, one of those people who lives above the fray, right? She doesn't, her family's not going to go hungry. Her heating bill is going to get paid. She's going to be able to put gas in her car. Her kids are going to go to private school. So it all gets to be a game for her. These are games, but they involve people's lives. What's going on in Israel is atrocious. And the easiest, simplest solution is for Hamas to simply release the hostages. What should happen is Israel should just level the place. They really should, because it's the only way that they're going to get rid of the Hamas element. But they're not that type of country. For whatever, for all the reasons, for whatever reason, we're not like them, we're better than them, whatever. And that's their choice. But what they are saying is just release the hostages. And what's AOC's response? Oh, it's Israel starving three-year-olds. You don't want to blame the people who are actually responsible for it. Nobody has to starve, is the point. Somehow Israel is being made the aggressor by Democrats. Why? Because they're a free democratic nation, I believe. These are all games, and unfortunately, these are games that are being played with people's lives. There is an easy solution here. Why don't Democrats want to call for Hamas to stand down? Why don't they? Because they have made the mistake of committing to the AOC base, the progressive base, the leftist base. It's why during the State of the Union speech, Joe Biden got up there and talked about we're sending a flotilla, we're sending a floating base to station itself off the shore of Gaza to bring aid that he knows darn well is not even going to get to the citizens of Gaza. We're going to do that. Why would he even say that? He knows that that is a statement that is in contradiction to our allyship with Israel. It's because they've committed themselves to this rabid base. And now the rabid base is about all they have left to win this election in 2024. And they know we're Israeli allies, but they also know they've thrown in their lot with a bunch of rabid anti-Semites. And they're trying to split the difference. And it doesn't work. It's disingenuous. It's evil. What AOC is suggesting is evil and callous. The no-brainer thing is to let the hostages go and end this. Israel has said they will back off. And then if they don't, let's have that discussion about who is starving three-year-olds. Right now, it's Hamas and their progressive allies who are starving three-year-olds and murdering people, by the way. AOC has a lot of defenses of Israel, of innocent people in Gaza. And no defense of innocent people in Israel. It's a game and real lives are at stake. I'm going to take another break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about this Israel thing. I'm Kira Davis, filling in for Tony Katz. You're listening to Tony Katz Today. Welcome back to Tony Katz Today. I'm Kira Davis filling in for Tony Katz today. And you can follow me on Twitter at Real Kira Davis. We've been talking about Israel. AOC was on Jake Tapper. over the weekend talking about forced famine by Israel. She didn't have anything to say about Hamas releasing the hostages, except to say, no, they should be able to do whatever they want and eat. It's just insane. But then, you know, she's not saying things are that much different from the administration. Here's a clip of Kamala Harris talking about the Israeli activity at Rafah in the Gaza Strip. And well, here's what she had to say about it. Play that clip.
We have been clear in multiple conversations and in every way that any major military operation in Rafah would be a huge mistake. Let me tell you something. I have studied the maps. There's nowhere for those folks to go. And we're looking at about 1.5 million people in Rafah who are there because they were told to go there, most of them. And so we've been very clear that it would be a mistake to move into Rafah with any type of military operation.
A mistake, but would there be consequences if he does move forward?
Well, we're going to take it one step at a time, but we've been very clear in terms of our perspective on whether or not that should happen.
Are you ruling out that there would be consequences from the United States?
I am ruling out nothing.
Do you ever feel clear when you hear Kamala talking? I don't. I think it's hilarious that she used the word maps in this statement. Let's not forget, this is our border czar. Did everyone forget that? This is she. As far as I know, she hasn't been taken off the assignment. They announced her as a border czar, what, 2 years ago, 3 years ago? I don't even remember now. What did she do? She didn't go down to the border. I don't even know if she knows, you know, what places are along the border. She clearly has no idea where our borders are. So I don't know how she can tell where Israel's borders are or where supposed Palestine's borders are. But it's just incredible for her to say, look, I've studied the maps. What does that mean, Kamala? There's nothing that's come out of your mouth that's made any sense. You don't seem to be an expert on anything. You've studied the maps. There's 1.5 million people there. Where are they going to go? Why can't they go to Egypt? Why can't they go to any of the other Muslim countries around there? Ask that question. Why is this our issue to deal with? Games, games, more games. All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to roll into the final hour of the show. I've got some more fun stories for you, so don't go anywhere. I'm Kira Davis, filling in for Tony Katz. You're listening to Tony Katz Today.